Welcome into the show right here on the radio, right here, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, with Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. You're the cure right here on AM 580. Of course, along the way, if you have any questions, feel free to give us a call at any time throughout the broadcast at 806-745-5800. You can text in as well at that same number, 806-745-5800. Well, let me say a good morning once again to Dr. Ben Edwards. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Wade. How are you this
morning?
I am
doing well, Can't complain. So, anyway, how are things? Did you have a good weekend?
Had a real good weekend.
Fantastic.
Just relax and hung out with the family.
Nah, I hear you. That's the name of the game right there. Well, we got another exciting show lined up for you this morning, and so we have a special guest by phone, but you wanted to say a few words first, then you'll introduce our guest.
Yes, I'm very pleased and happy to have a guest today, but before we introduce him, I wanted to first just do a little explanation of my point of view. We haven't really talked a lot on this show about vaccinations, and I know that's can be an inflammatory topic for some reason. I don't really understand why. We're all pro kids and pro health, and now there's this whole anti-vax, pro-vax, and we'll get into that. But today's show, we are going to talk about some of the facts and some of the truth in regards to vaccination and some of the subjects along those lines. But I wanted to remind everybody where I'm coming from. I'm a conventionally trained family physician. I was wanting to follow in both my grandfathers were general practice physicians in Central Texas. They did everything, took care of the whole family from cradle to grave and did surgery and did everything. And that's what I grew up knowing a doctor was. That's why I went to medical school, so I could be a small-town country doctor like my granddad's. And I was living that dream in post-Texas at the Garza County Health Clinic, just doing my thing, and very successfully, and to the point of attracting media attention. I had an article in Texas Monthly done, and then the Washington Post newspaper came and put me on the front page, all about small-town doctrine. And I'm not saying this to brag. What I'm doing is, again, for those new listeners, paint the picture of I was living my dream, following in my granddad's footsteps, had plenty of financial security, the town loved me, I was the only doctor in the whole county, now we've got the press writing good stories, everything's going smooth for those 7 years from 2005 to 2011, until I learned that there was a different way to do medicine called integrative or functional medicine, where you try to address root causes of inflammatory diseases, which are pretty much all diseases in the Western world. And that led me to this path of having to make this decision. Do I do what's right for the patient and spend 1 to 2 hours interviewing the patient and really being a detective and trying to figure out a root cause? Or do I stay in my conventional setting of 7-minute visits and throwing drugs to treat symptoms? And I had to make that decision to do what's best for the patient. So 5 years ago when my functional medicine practice was just starting and I was focusing on nutrition, hydration, movement, and peace, my four pillars, and people were improving their health outcomes by just doing these basic diet and lifestyle things. Well, I started to attract some mothers, three mothers in particular, early in this transition of my practice. And these three mothers had children who were vaccine injured. And at the time, I wasn't looking at vaccines. I still was preaching the company line that I was taught in medical school, which, by the way, in medical school, I wasn't taught much. I was basically given the schedule, this piece of paper from the CDC that says, here's the schedule. Here's when you vaccinate 2, 4, 6 months, 18 months. You know, here's the schedule, memorize that, here's the different vaccines, and just be sure that, you know, you get these done in your clinic. I'd never done any research on my own of safety studies, adverse reactions. I never read a package insert for any vaccination, never did any of that. And so these three moms came to me and told me their story. They were following the routine vaccination schedule. After the 18-month shot, the children had various reactions, from anything from a rash to a high fever to seizures, and then regressed in their developmental milestones. So these three moms presenting this story to me, I had to investigate. I have kids. My wife's due with our sixth child this August.
Right.
I had vaccinated on the routine schedule early on with our first kiddos, but I was obligated to investigate this. And my investigations just led me to more and more questions that I couldn't answer. So we tend to see pretty educated moms who are doing their own research and come to me with questions, and I don't have real good answers for a lot of these questions, and we'll get into some of those questions later. So I want to just paint that picture, kind of set the stage for how I've gotten to where I'm at. I love kids. I mean, we're having our sixth kid. Doctors go to medical school because they love people and want to help people. So when your patients report something to you and you need to investigate that, and that just leads to more questions, as an ethical and moral person, you have to, I felt obligated anyways, to give these moms the freedom to do their own vaccine schedule, their own timing of it, or to just say, no, I don't want to do any. Mm-hmm. Because these three moms actually were kicked out of their pediatrician's clinic because they wouldn't adhere to the routine schedule.
So wow.
I'm here as a voice of, hey, I'm open, let's research, let's dig, let's try to answer questions, and if there's not an answer, let's err on the side of safety. Let's err on the side of, hey, let's pause and do something different. So just wanted to throw that in there before we get into our whole story today with Dr. Andrew Wakefield. Dr. Wakefield, I'm very excited to have on the show today. Dr. Wakefield's an academic gastroenterologist who received his medical degree from St. Mary's Hospital Medical School at University of London in 1981. He pursued a career in gastroenterology with a particular interest in inflammatory bowel disease. He qualified as a fellow of the Royal College of Surgeons in 1985. He's published over 140 different scientific articles, book chapters, commentaries. Most recently in his career, has pursued investigations into the links between childhood vaccines, intestinal inflammation, and neurological injury to children. Most probably famous now for being the director of the film Vaxxed, which is a investigational documentary into the CDC's destruction of a study linking autism to MMR, which I'm afraid most people are still not aware of, even though the Vax has been out for a while now. And the study, the whistleblower who came out to talk about this destruction of evidence in this study, has been out for a couple of years now. But the vast majority of the public, and for sure my colleagues here in West Texas, aren't familiar with this CDC whistleblower. So anyways, Dr. Wakefield, thank you very much for joining us today.
Ben, it's a pleasure to be on. Thank you.
Well, Dr. Wakefield, I'd like to start. I know you've probably told your story a million times, but it's still a new story out here in Lubbock and West Texas, eastern New Mexico. So for our listeners, could you give kind of a, I know it's maybe hard to do, your a 20-year synopsis into 5 or 10 or 15 minutes, but tell us your story going back to really, I think it was 1998 when some moms came to you with some questions that caused you to have to start investigating yourself. So I'll let you just tell that story and kind of bring it up to current.
Certainly, Ben, thank you very much. My story is in many ways similar to yours. I came from a medical family, my parents, grandparents, great-grandparents, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, all went to the same medical school. And I was traditionally trained, and I was trained in medicine to listen to the patients, to listen to the parents of the patients, because they will provide you with the clues. And as you know, and you realize that cannot be done in a five-minute interview, which has been prescribed by the insurance industry. So I was a successful academic. I published 140 peer-reviewed papers. I led a team of 19 scientists looking at the root causes of inflammatory bowel disease. And our interest was in measles. And in 1994, we published a paper in The Lancet linking measles vaccine, the single measles vaccine, to Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. And it was posed as a question, is there a link? It was not in any way definitive, but it was certainly interesting. And that led to parents calling me in 1995. I remember it in May 1995, saying my child was developing perfectly normally. Their story was exactly the same as those 3 months. They'd not been anti-vaccine. They took their children to be vaccinated on schedule, and they'd suffered a catastrophic neurological and gastrointestinal reaction that ended up with a diagnosis of autism, which in my experience as a medical student was so rare that we weren't taught about it. And these parents were plausible, they were intelligent, they were articulate, and they told the same story. And It was a story of a normal child developing normally, meeting all their milestones, having a vaccine, developing an acute reaction, and that's the fever, the rash, seizures. They became, they slept for days, and when they woke up, they were never the same child again. They slipped into autism. And the reason that they'd come to me is that their physicians had, through a man and a woman, dismissed the gastrointestinal symptoms as being all in the mind or part of the autism, or just to be expected. And that, it clearly wasn't the case. These children were failing to thrive. They were falling off their centiles. They were they looked like famine children from a famine zone in West Africa. They were grossly distended abdomens. They had altered bowel habits, sometimes passing blood. They clearly, until proven otherwise, had an inflammatory bowel disease. And so I teamed up with the world's leading pediatric gastroenterologist at the time, Professor John Walker Smith, and his team of outstanding clinicians and scientists. And we investigated these children, and we did it on the basis of their clinical need. And the parents were right. As is so often the case in medicine, the medical profession has been completely wrong. And the parents were right. They had an inflammatory bowel disease, and when we treated that with standard medication that you would use for Crohn's, then there was not only an improvement in their gastrointestinal issues, the diarrhea stopped, the pain stopped, and they slept at night, and they were happy, but they started speaking again. It was rather like the Lorenzo's oil situation. And being academics, we said that didn't happen, and we did it. By the time I left the Royal Free, we did about 180 children. It happened time and time and time and time again. It was remarkable. And so the parents were right, and it was a lesson in humility, and it was a lesson in paying attention, listening, and, as I say, having the humility to not assume that you know better, mm-hmm. but to discover. And that was very exciting. And so because they were right about that, we had an absolute moral and professional obligation to investigate their claims into whether the vaccine had caused their problem, their child's problem, or not. And so we did, and that was the beginning of the end of my career. And what happened to me is what happens to any doctor or scientist who questions vaccine safety, who threatens the pharmaceutical industry's profits in particular, and who threatens the ideology of public health. And it's not conspiracy theory, it's a fact. It's just ruthless pragmatism. If you threaten us, we will destroy you, and that's what they set out to do. But life is about choices, as you rightly pointed out, and those choices are, do I work for the pharmaceutical industry, do I represent public health, or do I represent the parent sitting across the desk from me saying, this is what happened to my children, when I know that very likely they are right. They've been right about the bowel disease, they've been right about everything else. Are they right about the vaccine? On the basis of the evidence so far, the answer is yes. And so I had to make a choice, and that choice was not a difficult one, although subsequent events have been challenging for sure. I lost my medical license, I lost my career, I lost my salary, I lost my country. And I decided to stay in the fight. And all of this would have endured had it not been for one man, and that is Dr. William Thompson, the CDC whistleblower, senior scientist who was in charge of major vaccine safety studies, who participated in a fraud in 2001, where they had looked at the association, the causal association between early MMR vaccination and risk of autism. And this is, in fact, a hypothesis that we had given to them at meetings with the CDC. And at when I testified before Congress, we had said, we believe it's not all children, therefore, which children are at risk, and we believe that it was those who got the vaccine earlier. Because children who get infectious diseases earlier, like measles, may be at increased risk of an adverse event. So was this the same with vaccination? And that's exactly what they found. And that's exactly what they decided to conceal from the public, and recklessly they put millions of children in harm's way. And it was only 14 years later that Thompson's conscience could bear this no longer, and he came forward and told us. He not only told us, and we recorded him telling us, he gave us 10,000 documents to to this effect. All of the analysis plans, the data, the serial outputs of the data showing how they changed it, where they changed it, and why they changed it. And that is the basis on which we made the documentary Vaxxed. Vaxxed is not anti-vaccine. It is a story of fraud at the world's foremost health agency. And it is perhaps the most egregious fraud in the history of science, because these people were charged with the welfare and protection of the children of this country, and by proxy, the children of the world. And they defied that. They broke all the rules, and many, many children, an unknown number of children, have suffered, in my opinion, permanent neurological injury as a consequence. So things are starting to unravel now. They're desperately angry about Vax. They don't know what to do about Vax. They've tried to censor it. It's been one of the most censored films in film history. But the more they try and censor it, the more people want to watch it. It's now one of Amazon's highest streaming films in all categories. And it's played in over 600 cities in the United States, and is now in Germany, Australia, Poland. It's everywhere. So it's unstoppable. And the truth will come out. And the tragedy of all of this is that the truth should have come out a very long time ago. And what's happened to me is just history. It doesn't matter. I'm irrelevant. What happens, what matters to the future of this country, the children of this country, clearly matters very, very much. And we're faced with a situation, and I'll end on this to say that if we do not act now, then by 2032 in this country, one in two children will have autism. And those are based upon the CDC's own numbers of ascertaining autism cases over time and showing the dramatically increasing trend, and that is seen elsewhere around the developed world. So it is the greatest crisis that faces this country, and yet so many people are unaware or dismissive or persuaded by the public health, public relations exercise that is seeking to protect their friends in the industry and their own ideology at the expense of these children.
Yeah. Well, if that story, I mean, that's just an unbelievable story. And I think that's part of the problem, is most people, just normal, everyday working Americans, can't believe that anyone would partake in something like this. When you're talking about kids and kids' health, that they would cover something like this up. But I want to go back, because one of the fascinating things I found as I was reading your book, Callous Disregard, watching Vax, doing my research for the interview, your conclusion in the Lancet paper that started this whole thing, I want to go back to that, your conclusion was not don't vaccinate. Your conclusion was we need to separate out the MMR, which measles, mumps, rubella, all in one shot. We need to separate that out to just measles, separate from mumps, separate from rubella, and space them out. And even in Vaxxed, you know, I don't, 14 years later, however many years later that was, a movie, that was your same thing you said at the in the conclusion of that movie, is let's agree we need vaccinated for measles, but let's separate it out into single vaccinations. And I found that fascinating, that that was your conclusion on the in the paper and in Vaxxed, when that's not what you hear. And Vaxxed goes through all these different public figures, all the news commentators, Bill Gates, President Obama, I mean, right down the whole list, you see everyone basically calling you fraudulent, liar, anti-vax, all this garbage, where obviously they didn't read the paper, original paper, or didn't watch the movie. So go back to that Lancet paper on one thing I want to point out for our listeners is there was already a precedent, already history of the MMR combined together causing some new novel pathology, and specifically I'm talking about meningitis in Japan. So can you speak to that a little bit about your conclusion of separating those out versus all together and what we'd already seen in Japan and in Canada?
Certainly. When I got involved in this, I decided as a scientist that it would be responsible to go back and do an analysis of all of the pre-licensing safety studies of measles containing vaccines, so single measles, measles rubella, and the MMR vaccine, and to analyze those to see if there were any clues as to why this had occurred. Were the vaccine safety studies before they were licensed and put onto the market and put into children, were they adequate? Were they done properly? And the answer was absolutely no. I wrote a 260-page report, and so my suggestion that parents should be given the choice of single vaccines was based upon that, not upon the observation and parental reports in the 12 children in the Lancet. And one of the striking observations, and you refer to the experience in Canada and the UK of meningitis with the MMR. This did not happen with the Merck MMR2 product. It happened with a vaccine made by SmithKline Beecham and distributed throughout Europe and Canada and Australia. The meningitis was due to the mumps strain of the vaccine. It was called Urabi AM9, and it was made by the Japanese. Now, the interesting thing about this vaccine is that it had been given 5 million doses of the single mumps vaccine had been given without any prospective reports of meningitis. And it was only when it was combined with the measles and rubella vaccines into MMR that suddenly there was this alarming epidemic of meningitis. And so one and one and one with live viruses, adding measles, mumps, and rubella together doesn't equal three. It equals something very, very different. It didn't expect it, and it led to worldwide removal of this vaccine because its safety profile was unacceptable. That was covered up. So when I saw that, and this was disclosed to me in large part by a whistleblower from the Department of Health in the UK, who appears in callous disregard as well, I became very, very concerned, not only because of the potential adverse effects of combined viral vaccines, but because of the government's willingness to cover it up and hide it and put children knowingly at risk. That was most alarming. And I think that was one of the reasons they had to silence me, is that I was aware of this and they knew that I was aware of this. So I made a recommendation based upon the available scientific evidence. And what I did is to say that parents should have the choice. This is what I would recommend. And at that time, the single vaccines were available. They were available in the UK and they were available in the US. Otherwise, I wouldn't have made that recommendation. What happened 6 months later in the UK is the government unilaterally withdrew the importation license for the single vaccine, therefore depriving parents of a choice. And at that point, then measles came back, because parents were saying no to MMR. And so the responsibility for the recrudescence of measles lies wholly in England with the responsibility with the Department of Health. Now, in the US, it was slightly different. Some years later, Merck made the decision to unilaterally withdraw the availability of the single vaccine. So Merck, in effect, made a policy decision in this country and took away the choice of single vaccines. And it was therefore their way or the highway. And again, parents were very, very concerned because they had seen in their communities, their schools, their own children, adverse reactions to this vaccine, often leading to neurodevelopmental disorders. And so they stopped vaccinating. And measles now has occurred in pockets around the country with huge news reports clearly blaming me. But if the single vaccines had been available and parents had followed my recommendation, then this would not have happened. So despite what one reads in the newspaper, the responsibility for this action has come about, again, because in this country, the drug company took a policy decision on vaccination.
Yeah. So just to summarize for the listeners, basically the mumps vaccine, given singly, 5 million doses, no meningitis reported. Once it was combined into measles, mumps, rubella vaccine into one shot, then you see an outbreak of meningitis that's clearly causal related to the MMR. So that was pulled, and then the meningitis went away. So when you saw these mothers reporting gastrointestinal inflammatory symptoms with the combination vaccine, and I want to hear more from you on your investigation of the bowel. What did you find in the bowel, and what made you correlate that to the MMR? Was it just the timing that the mothers told you? Were there any findings in the pathology? But ultimately, again, your conclusion was the combination of the three is the problem. Let's go to the single, which you don't hear that. I want to stress it. Nobody hears that when you hear media reports when you talk about Andrew Wakefield or callous disregard or vax. But back to the bowel. What did you find anything in particular in the bowel with your pathology?
Yes. What we found was, it was pretty, I suppose, unexpected. It was a subtle inflammation, not as severe as we would see in Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis, but undoubtedly an inflammatory change. And in fact, when I, by the time I'd left the Royal Free, I think overall we published about 15 or 16 papers on this, characterizing the bowel disease in great detail. People say, well, the Lancet paper had no control. It was a case report. It was a case series. And that's how human disease syndromes are first described, be it autism or Asperger's syndrome or AIDS or anything. It's a handful of patients in whom the signs and symptoms are so consistent and the pathological findings are so idiosyncratic that they merit publication in their own right. And that's exactly how medicine evolved. And so we then followed up with controlled studies analyzing in detail the findings in the bowel. Is this Crohn's? Is it a form of Crohn's? Is it food allergy? What is it? And we found that it was quite distinct. The inflammatory, the nature of the inflammation was quite distinct. It was new, and this has subsequently been replicated around the world. In fact, gastrointestinal disease in children with autism is the most consistent and common finding in science around the world, in autism science, and this comes from Yale and Harvard and elsewhere. It's and what there is in a nutshell is inflammation, deficiencies in the digestive enzymes in the gut so that children do not digest their food properly, a leakiness of the gut so that things are getting in that shouldn't get in and things are coming out that shouldn't get out, that in particular the bacteria in the intestine of children are altered compared with healthy children. And this has really been one of the most exciting findings, because we now know that the quality, the health, the nature of the bacteria in your intestine are vital to not only your health status, your immune system function, but to your brain development, your actual brain development and behavior. So no man is an island. The bacteria in our gut are essential for so many things. I was at a meeting the other day where a scientist who published on this said we are, in fact, 9/10 bacteria, 1/3 human, 1/10 human. And that is a measure of how important the gut bacteria are to our health. And they are different. These gut bacteria are different in children with autism. And that, I think, goes to the root cause of what we are seeing in these children. And it's different, I think, because the gut is damaged, the immune system in the gut is damaged, and that facilitates the overgrowth of these bacteria. Now, that's theory, that's hypothesis, and it clearly could be investigated. And the sadness of all of this, Ben, is that if we had been allowed to continue our work at the Royal Free, if we'd been allowed, the natural process of science had been allowed to continue, then we would have answers to all of these questions now. And we don't. We're 10 years behind, more than that now, because the work was destroyed, deliberately and willfully destroyed.
Yeah. Well, that's what gets me the most of all this. I don't know. I believe this was in Vaxxed when they talked about in 2014, that's when the big outbreak of measles at Disneyland, and the media was up in arms about it, and it was all over the news. And I believe the number was 644 cases total in the United States in 2014. But then right after that, they put up the graph of how many new diagnoses of autism, 1,082,353. Just unbelievable. And going back to when I was born, 1974, 1 in 5,000, the CDC said, was the prevalence. I think 1 in 10,000 was pretty much the rate of autism throughout the... Since the first case was reported in the 1930s, it stayed roughly 1 in 10,000, then 1 in 5,000 in 1975, and then an escalation started to occur. So just in the past 40 years, now we're up to 1 in 46. But in 1995, it was 1 in 500. Now we're at 1 in 46. So just imagine the millions of kids that if these questions and theories would have been investigated more, and in fact they have been to a degree, because your research has been replicated, has it not?
It has. And one thing that I really want to draw your attention to, this is so important, are two papers that have just come out. One thing that the Congress, back in 86, when the National Vaccine Injury Act was passed by Ronald Reagan, signed off into law by Ronald Reagan, this exempted the drug companies from any liability for damage done by the vaccines given on the CDC's recommended schedule. And what CDC were mandated to do at that stage were baseline safety studies. They never did them. And that would have been a comparison of the long-term health outcomes in fully vaccinated children versus unvaccinated children. And they've refused since that time to do that study. Now, it has been done, and it's just been published. And this is what I want to bring your attention to, because it is so, so important. It's been done at the Jackson University in Mississippi, and the lead author is Tony Morrison. Dr. Tony Morrison. And it looks in homeschoolers at the rates of allergies and neurodevelopmental disorders in children who were fully vaccinated compared with those who were not vaccinated. And the results are absolutely alarming. Now, in reference to the prevalence of neurodevelopmental disorders in vaccinated children, it's over 10%. It's more than one, so you quote one in 48, one in 10 children have got a neurodevelopmental disorder. We simply did not see this when we were at school. But the risk for a whole host of problems, including neurodevelopmental disorders, autism, ADHD, learning disabilities, eczema, chronic illness, and allergic rhinitis, are hugely increased in the vaccinated. They are so much less healthy than unvaccinated children. The most compelling finding to me is that when they looked at children who were premature, born at less than 37 weeks, then the risk for the fully vaccinated was massively increased, a 12-fold increased risk. We're talking about the similar risk to smoking and lung cancer. And this makes it biologically plausible. Why? Because it's the same observation, in effect, that Dr. Thompson and his colleagues made at the CDC. It's age of exposure. The younger the age of exposure, the greater the risk of an adverse vaccine reaction.
Yeah.
These are compelling data.
That's incredible. And that's the kind of facts and data and research that I need to be able to counsel my patients, because I have patients that want to be vaccinated. They want to vaccinate their children, but they're asking me questions like, do I need to do a hepatitis vaccine on day of life one? And I've educated patients, so they know the blood-brain barrier is not developed till day eight, and there's 250 micrograms of aluminum in that vaccine, and only 25 micrograms is considered safe. Do I want to give that on day one, or do I wait? One mama knew that, or showed me, I learned that by age 20, 24%, only 24% of those kids vaccinated with the hepatitis vaccine on day of life one still have antibodies. And hepatitis is transmitted through IV drug abuse or sexual intercourse. So by the time you're age 20 and you may be dabbling in those two risk factors, only 75% of the kids aren't covered anymore. I didn't know that. So these moms come in educated, and they ask me these hard questions, and then my own wife is going to ask me some hard questions too, with this baby we're having in August. And I need to be able to look to the data and give some answers. And that's where I feel really that the past 10 to 15 years we've wasted so much time. I'd like to be able to risk stratify these kids. How old's your mom? Did your mom have autoimmune disease? Did your mom have bowel disease? Were you breast or bottle fed? There's so many factors we could look at. Age of vaccination, the schedule, do we push it back? Do we spread them out? There's so many things we could have determined by now, and so many kids' lives that potentially could have been, we've prevented some of these permanent neurological changes. So that's very, very frustrating for your average doctor who is trying to be honest with the patient and trying to investigate and not just give the company line that, that study was debunked 20 years ago when the research has been duplicated. It's not a question in my mind anymore. It's clear. And even if it was just circumstantial evidence that there was a question mark, of course, err on the side of let's wait. If there's maybe a question that giving these shots too early, let's wait. But now it's not a question. I mean, when William Thompson came out and showed clearly the data was altered in that study, and that's what I want to focus on when we get back. We got to take a break, but and I'll let you talk. I'm kind of going off on a tangent here. It's just very frustrating for me to not be able to adequately counsel my patients because I feel like I can't trust where a lot of these recommendations are coming from government sources. But when you actually look at the research, it's actually exactly opposite of what some of the government agencies are recommending me to tell my patients. So it's a very difficult position for me to be in. But we'll talk about that and more about CDC whistleblower William Thompson after the break.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580 with Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, with Veritas Medical right here in Lubbock. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com. Our number directly to the clinic, 1-855-6-VERITAS. Integrative holistic medicine family practitioner, that's what we do. Veritasmedical.com, check it out. Special guest on the show, of course, right here on the program, Dr. Andrew Wakefield, talking about these vaccinations and how they can sometimes be very detrimental to your health. I have to tell you, though, that just real quickly, I hadn't said much this show, but I've taken every vaccination known to man, literally. I've taken more, I probably in the top 1% of Americans that have taken, I've just recently took the smallpox vaccination from the United States Army. I've taken all the anthrax shots. I've taken MMR, yellow fever, you name it, I've taken it. And the whole time that we were doing all this, what did the federal government tell me as a soldier? Hey, don't worry about it. You're all good. That's why I'm so screwed up now. Mm-hmm. Just saying.
Well, I wasn't going to say it, Wade, but since you said it.
Anyway.
And that's a great point, because I have a lot of doctors that tell me, well, it can't cause autism because look at all these kids that don't have autism.
Right.
That's not a valid argument. And that's what we're trying to talk about here is we want to try to risk stratify. What are the odds that you are going to get this? So are you more prone to it or not? And how can we decrease your risk and all that? These are legitimate questions. We ask it with every other disease process. What are the risk factors? How do we modify them? And how do we categorize these folks? And blah, blah, blah. And for some reason, when it comes to this medicine, I mean, it's a medicine. You can classify this as a medicine.
Sure.
I don't know of any other drug, especially when it's a combination drug, three different viruses in one shot, that you're going to just consider it to be safe until proven otherwise. We need to consider it to be dangerous until proven otherwise. We do that with everything else. Mm-hmm. So it's just common sense. We talked about this a couple weeks ago with Jason Fung about bringing common sense back to medicine.
Well, the Army dropped the smallpox vaccination, the weaponized version, because older soldiers above the age of 40, there was a certain segment in there that were taking it. If they had eczema, mm-hmm. that caused cardiac events. I mean, it was killing them. I mean, we had several here in Texas that died from just taking the shot before they even deployed over to Iraq.
Yeah.
And that's when the government said, okay, well, maybe we need to pull back on some of this stuff. I mean, it was really, really crazy.
Yeah, and the problem is if you get a question, a big question mark on one vaccine, that calls into question all of them in my patient's eyes.
Yeah.
I mean, if they can't trust one, how can they trust any? And now you're just into this huge mess. So that's kind of where we find ourselves today.
Yeah. We'll take a caller.
Let's do that real quick, and then we'll get into the CDC study.
With Dr. Wakefield here on the program. Good morning. Welcome into the show.
Good morning. There's many factors that I've thought about my own self. We used to not be able. I mean, it was against the rule to take your newborn baby out amongst different families for anywhere from 10 days to 6 weeks. Because of, they thought, this is what they said, your baby might get germs and might die from the exposure to other people who had germs that people didn't know about. And it also made me wonder, well, what of the months that a child was born, did they have less diseases later in life, especially like asthma or what have you not, because we had germs and then we had viruses. And I was thinking, well, do the babies who were born in July, whenever it came to August, September, October, when October hit, they would seem like that's the month they would be so much allergies. So many things that I'm thinking back and forth. What months of the year were they born? What years were they born? When were they conceived? How did that interfere? I mean, a thousand things. I just love your show. Thanks so much, and I'll hang up and listen.
Well, that's
right.
There are a lot of potential factors involved and lots of questions. We should be asking them. We should be investigating them, getting the truth, and then we can take care of patients better. And I just want to review real quick with how the original, it's not a vaccine, but how we were immunized originally before all these vaccines, and measles is a great example. And that's the funny thing. All my older patients, we take a very thorough history on every patient. Now, we spend an hour taking a history. And all the older folks, had measles, had mumps. It was like, you know, everybody had it. It's like when I was a kid, everybody had chickenpox. And that's just, yep, had them. The usual childhood illnesses, and we go right through them, and my older patients say, yeah, and it was kind of a no big deal, trivial thing. But moms would pass antibodies to the baby through the breast milk for measles. Those antibodies would last in the baby for the first 5, 6, 7 years. Those early years when the baby's most susceptible to harm, totally protected through mom's breast milk and the antibodies that mom has. So about 7 or 8 years old, the kids go to school, those antibodies have worn off, measles comes through town, the kids contract measles, it's a trivial illness at that age, no problem, it's like a cold, they get over it in a few days, and now they have lifelong permanent immunity because of that natural exposure. So when that kid's 20 years old and has a baby and breastfeeds that baby, the cycle starts again, and that's how it was designed. And we see this huge outbreak of autoimmune disease. She mentioned asthma, allergies, eczema, but autoimmune in general, there's some immune system derangement going on in these kids today. So there's lots of things to consider, lots of things to look at. When you see rates go from 1 in 5,000 in 1975 to 1 in 46, or this study Dr. Wakefield just talked about now, 10%, that's not genetics. Doctors can't just say, oh, you're born with autism, or it's genetic, or you got it from your mom. No. Yeah, genes can't change that fast. In 40 years, you can't mutate your genes that fast. So it's environmental. It's obvious it's environmental. Now the studies have shown this. They've been duplicated, replicated. And now I want to go right to that CDC study that we've been mentioning, and it's the subject of the film Vaxxed. So a study was performed. I may let you just take this, Dr. Wakefield. I want to get the dates wrong, but basically a study was performed. The data was not favorable for MMR. It did show some causal linkage between autism, and so they manipulated the data, and then the paper was published that said there is no link. I think it even said no more studies are needed. Don't study this anymore. It's crazy. And William Thompson, the head lead scientist on the paper, came out later and said, no, we changed the data. But that's probably, I butchered that story. We'll let Dr. Wakefield tell more of those details, if you would, Dr. Wakefield.
Certainly. Well, the study was a study looking at the age of exposure as a possible risk factor, breaking children down into categories by virtue of the age at which they got the vaccine, 12 to 18 months. In other words, on the CDC's recommended schedule, 18 to 24, 24 to 36, and after 36. So they compared these exposures before and after 36 months in those groups. What they found is that there was a highly significant increased risk of autism in those who got the vaccine younger, before 36 months, in two groups of children. The first was a group that they anticipated. They had said, if we're going to find an effect, if there really is a causal association, the children that we should see it in are those who had no problems at birth. Their first year of life was absolutely fine. They had no delays, no cerebral palsy, no seizures, no visual or hearing problems. They had reached their milestone. And then something happened. Something hit them, and then they lost that. And that's the group they anticipated finding it in. That they called isolated autism. It was a new term, but their term, isolated autism, in other words, isolated autism occurring in isolation from anything else. And they found a highly significant risk in that group. across all races. And the other group that they found a highly significant risk in was African-American boys. And this was unexpected that there was this race effect, but there it was. It was quite clear. And these were the effects that they then decided to cover up. And despite all their efforts to cover them up, to leave them out, to readjust the analysis, to change everything, they were still left with a residual effect. And so what they decided to do is to leave out more data to allow them to describe that residual effect, that risk, as just an artifact. It was layer upon layer upon layer of fraud that was required to produce the end result. They then, in 2002, they decided collectively to destroy the documents, the incriminating documents, that would show that they'd ever done those analyses that yielded the causal effect. And so Thompson describes how they got into a room at the weekend, very unusual for the CDC to work at weekends, though, and they brought in a big garbage can, they selectively went through all of their data, and they destroyed, they threw out everything that was incriminating. And we can say this with impunity in a documentary because we have all of the facts. We have the evidence. And people say, and it has been said in the press, that this story is false, that it's not true. Let me tell you this. If there was one element, we have accused these people of the worst humanitarian crime in the history of the world, in effect, because they were charged with the well-being of these children, and they breached that sacred trust. If there had been one falsehood, one mistake, one error in that film, they would have sued us to the moon and back.
Yeah.
There has not been a single whisper, not a whisper. Why? Because they know that it's true.
And to me, that is the most unbelievable part of the whole thing, is this is true. I mean, the documents are there. William Thompson, thankfully, kept the documents, gave y'all the documents, is willing to testify. I believe y'all gave the documents to a congressman, and I do want to touch on this. I saw in the movie, in the documentary, Congressman Burton in 2002 appeared to me to be trying to dig into this potential link to autism way back in 2002 in front of Congress. And then in 2014, there was another congressman, Posey, I believe from Florida, or maybe this was in 2015 even, who did the same thing, tried to pursue this on the floor of Congress, but no, there's not been a formal investigation called or anyone subpoenaed or anything like that. So the facts are there, the documents are there, the whistleblower's there. Everything's there. The congressman's there trying to move this thing forward, but nothing's happening. And on top of that, nobody in the public knows this. My fellow doctors don't know it, even up to the university level, don't know this. It's just not out there. They could go find it. It's out there to be found, but it's not widely publicized. So that's the tragedy to me, that this whole thing appears to be kind of swept under the rug. But are we anywhere further down with potential investigations in Congress or rectifying this situation, bringing it, everyone coming clean, let's set the record straight, and now let's start doing the real research to get real, you know, more definitive answers? We already have some definitive answers, but where are we there?
Right. Well, I think that in summary, that Congress has completely failed the American people. Mm-hmm. Congress is terrified of this. I have tried to prevail upon Jason Chaffetz, as chairman of the Oversight Committee on Government Reform, that should investigate this. That was the committee that Dan Burton was chairman of back in the day. And there is a terror of investigating this issue, of calling into question vaccine safety. And I've met with him many times. We presented him with extensive documentation detailing unambiguous fraud on the part of a federal agency that has compromised the health of children in this country, and they failed to act on it. I am most, most disappointed. In fact, I'm sending a further letter to his office today, but I gather that he is actually resigning from government and going back to Utah. But the point of all this is, when we last met with Chaffetz and his team, they said, well, we don't think he'll make a good witness because he's in favor of vaccination, and I said, can I stop you there? I do not care. We do not care. We are not here to get Dr. Thompson's opinion on whether he likes apple pie or vaccination or anything else. We're here to discuss a fraud in a federal agency that is unambiguous. It's not contested. It's admitted by him. That's what your job is. And then we got into the meeting a bit further. This chief of staff was said, well, what about all the studies that say vaccines don't cause autism? I said, let me stop you again. We are not here. We're not asking you to judge the merits of the science for and against the causal association between vaccines and autism. That is not your job. We are asking you to investigate fraud in a federal agency. That is your job. And it was quite clear that they were desperate not to go anywhere near this, because either they've been prevailed upon by pharmaceutical industry sponsors of their campaigns or whatever, I don't know. But it's an utter disgrace that this has been allowed to happen. And the Flint, Michigan water contamination came before his committee within a month of it being exposed in the media. Mm-hmm. 1 month. And we're now over 2 years down the line, and this issue has not been investigated. So I'm afraid I've been hugely disappointed by the response of the federal government, and I'm only hoping now that the executive branch of the government, with Donald Trump in charge, who says, I believe vaccines cause autism and here's why, will take this more seriously.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, Robert Kennedy and Robert De Niro had a press conference, it's been a couple or 3 months ago now, and it was fascinating that Robert Kennedy's, and he's focused on mercury and safety studies. Are there any safety studies that prove mercury safe to be in a vaccine? And he can't find any, and he gave a $100,000 prize reward to anybody that could produce that study. But that Vaccine Safety Commission, are we anywhere? Do you have any updates on that or know anything about that?
No, you know as much as I do. I'm hoping it will happen. I think he'd be an excellent candidate for the job. There's huge pressure for it not to happen because they don't want this investigated. They don't want these vaccinated versus unvaccinated studies made public. They don't want anyone to know. They want to preserve this veil of deceit and secrecy. But I do hope that Trump sticks to his guns and goes ahead with that commission.
Yeah. Well, I just want to stress to the listeners, during that discussion on the CDC study, what William Thompson found when they studied, these were kids in Atlanta, Georgia, and they were doing the study to try to put to rest this notion that MMR could be linked to autism. And the data showed, yes, there was a link, and then they manipulated the data to try to make that relationship disappear, and they just couldn't get it done, so then they just threw data away. But you said there was a highly statistical significant correlation between the MMR and autism. What exactly was highly, what numbers are we talking? What are the increased risk in those populations, specifically the African-American population?
There was sort of 3 to 7-fold increased risk. So again, a substantial risk, highly statistically significant, which could well account for a high proportion of the cases of autism at the population level. And you mentioned other factors like mercury, and I am absolutely persuaded by the data that these factors, mercury, aluminum, are participating in this, if you like, a perfect storm of compromise to the developing immune system, that these things, these metals, are capable of damaging the immune system or perverting it to a pro-allergic type response. And that is going to make you less able to deal with a live viral vaccine like MMR. So if you preload a child with neurotoxins that their body cannot clear, and then you expose them to live viral vaccines, then the risk is going to increase. This is why it's not plateaued. This is why it continues to go up, is because the schedule is intensified year on year.
Yeah.
And it's a real worry.
Yeah. Well, I don't know what it's going to take. I mean, we're at 1 in 46, and now this study that 10% of the kids are affected in some way. I just don't know if, I mean, Stephanie Seneff was on last week with us talking about that 50% of the kids by 2032, 80% of the boys in 2032, and this exponential rise of this curve. I just don't, it's very frustrating for me. I don't understand. I mean, I kind of do. I know when there's a lot of money involved, and I don't want to get into conspiracy theory, but it's just frustrating. I wish those studies had been done, but There's still hope, as long as there's doctors out there who, like yourself, still are guided by morals and ethics and the truth. And I had one of my mentors tell me one time, Ben, all that matters is when you're in that room with a patient and it's just you and that patient, you always do what's best, what you know is best. You is using your clinical expertise, your clinical judgment. You know, people talk about evidence-based medicine, which that's almost, that's the funny thing is now there's evidence. The evidence is there on the relationship. But that evidence-based medicine definition is threefold. And part of it is you use the best scientific published data, but also you take into account your clinical expertise and you take into account the patient's values. And I have patients that come to me that have made the decision based off their own instincts or their own research or their own feelings that they don't want to follow the routine schedule. My clinical expertise of both my experience with patients and looking at the data myself, those two trump just the clinical evidence. And doctors forget that, and they just follow like blind sheep, it seems like, these recommendations, and these patients are crying out for some answers. And we got to be able to give them some real answers and not just this company line of, oh, all this has been debunked. No, it hasn't been debunked. Let's look at the research. And one thing that just highlights to me this mentality of a lot of physicians, I have a physician that's very, very close to my family. And in 2011, 2012, when I was just starting to open my mind to a new way of practicing medicine, I wasn't even looking at the whole vaccine thing. I was just looking at doing more of a nutritional-minded integrative functional medicine approach, and I was visiting with this physician about it, and I was talking about iodine and Dr. Brownstein's theories on iodine and mineral resupplementation and probiotics and just some basic stuff. And out of nowhere, this doctor said, well, you know, Dr. Wakefield's stuff was totally debunked. And this was in 2011 when I was just starting to learn about different ways to practice. And I didn't even know who you were. I thought it was odd. I kind of think it's odd that I even remember this conversation. But I remember thinking, what are you talking about? I don't even know Wakefield. I didn't mention Wakefield. Who is Wakefield? And I went home that night to look you up and see what she was even talking about. But to me, that just represented this just knee-jerk reaction. If you talk about anything out of the conventional, normal, standard kind of answer, some of these docs give you this knee, and this doctor was a pediatrician, highly trained pediatrician. And it just makes me remember how certain docs just kind of follow that company line. But now, for me, informed consent means something totally, there's a deeper meaning to that. We all learn about informed consent in school. You have to, before you do any medical procedure or recommend any medical therapy, you've got to inform your patient of the pros and cons, of risk and benefit. What if you do nothing? What if you take this drug or take this procedure? And now informed consent, knowing what I know and knowing what the literature and the data shows and what Dr. Wakefield has presented today, I have to tell patients that. That's my obligation legally to inform my patients, because now I do know these things. So I just want to say thank you, Dr. Wakefield, for your sacrifice. We didn't really focus on how your license was stripped and your career was taken away. You mentioned you lost your medical license, your career, and your country. And so the sacrifice, I can't imagine you and your family and all you've had to go through. But I know you always deflect that to all these kids, all the sacrifice of all these families and kids that are permanently injured. So there's a lot of sacrifice all the way around. But I want to thank you for all you've done, all you continue to do. And I know you have peace in your heart about doing what you've done. I just really want to thank you again for sharing your story and getting the truth out there.
Thank you, Ben. It's been a privilege doing what I do, and I, you know, there's a price to pay, but it's worth it. I mean, I see the next child with autism, I think I don't have a problem. This child has a problem, so get over yourself and get on with it. So thank you very much for having me on the show, and congratulations to you and your wife on number 6.
Well, thank you very, very much. And I encourage everybody to look at Vax on Amazon or on streaming, or go to their website. Callous Disregard is Dr. Wakefield's book that explains the whole story in depth of the Lancet paper that kind of started this whole thing in 1998. So a very good book, a very good documentary. I know it's hard to get the facts and hard to get the truth, but I would highly recommend, and I do recommend, every parent watch that documentary prior to committing to any vaccine schedule, so they can have a clean conscience and increase the odds of that baby being healthy.
All right. Thank you so much. We appreciate that, Dr. Wakefield. We look forward to having you back. And again, you have a wonderful rest of the week, sir.
Thank you.
All right. Dr. Ben Edwards, of course, likewise, have a great week. We look forward to seeing you back here next week on the show, right here on You're the Cure. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, or feel free to call the practice directly, 1-855-6-VERITAS. You're the Cure, right here on AM 580. Stick around now, Unconfused, coming up next, right here.